Welcome back to Block the Meter with Jim Suhan. Today's guest, Dick Bremer, needs no introduction. I'll introduce him anyway. Longtime Twins play-by-play man on TV, longtime Twins fan. And Dick's been quite a summer. Twins are good. You see some of your buddies going to Cooperstown. This has been a remarkable series of events for me to watch, and you're much closer to it than I am. Let's start off with the Hall of Fame stuff. What struck you most about, you know, that group of people with Twins connections going into the Hall of Fame?
Well, you know, you've been to Cooperstown, so you know it's such a magical place during induction weekend. And I was fortunate enough, we freed up things family-wise. All four members of my family were there, so we got to experience it together again, like we did when Burt Blyleven was inducted 11 years ago. But it's just such a wonderful place, in addition to the joy I felt for Jim and Tony being inducted that weekend. Just fun stuff happens because of who's there. We were sitting on the back porch of the Otisaga Hotel on Saturday morning, just having coffee, the four of us, and Hall of Famer Billy Williams pulled up a chair and spent 45 minutes with us. Now, that's the type of stuff that can only happen, I think, in Cooperstown. So it was just a fun time. The Twins threw a heck of a party on Saturday night. They had eight Hall of Famers there who some were inducted as Twins, some just played parts of their career with the Twins, Jack Morris, Jim Thome, Paul Molitor, Dave Winfield, and the four Twins who went in. So it just was a absolute fun weekend, one of the best weekends I've ever had in my life. And I just was basically a fan the entire weekend.
Yeah, it really does bring out the child in a good way when you're there. I'll share a memory I have. I do want to remind people this is TalkNorth.com. Thank you for listening. Thanks to some of our long-running sponsors, Star Bank, TSR Injury Law, Minnesota Propane, Perfect Ash. Thanks to all of our other sponsors across the network. We keep growing the network, and we appreciate you listening. Thanks to our producer, Brianne Burdett. And we do recommend subscribing at your favorite podcast app, although you can always go to TalkNorth.com and find the shows and the archives. I was very lucky in that my first real Cooperstown experiences were covering Kirby Puckett going in, Dave Winfield too, but Kirby was really the life of the party. And I knew the president then of the Hall of Fame, that was Jeff Idelson. He gave me, and I went there early and spent some time with him. It was just a great inside look at it all. And I'd be honest, Dick, I'm not a big museum guy. My parents took me to every museum on the East Coast when I was a kid, and I kind of burned out on museums. But seeing Puck go through all that through the whole weekend really brought it all to life for me. It was just, and then, you know, I got to see Molitor go in. I got to see Burt go in. I do feel very fortunate that I was able to cover this group of people from the Twins that went in there.
Yeah. And I remember going in 1984, Harmon Killebrew was my broadcast partner. And I remember sitting there as he was giving his speech thinking, this is a once in a lifetime opportunity for me. My broadcast partner is going into the Hall of Fame. And of course it happened again in 2011 and it happened again this year. I just would, you know, I owe so much of my career to my passion for this baseball team. And that all started watching Jim Cott and Tony Oliva play in those early Twins years. So it was really touching for me in a sense, even more than it was in 2011 for Burt, even though he was my broadcast partner for 25 years, but those two guys finally got, in my mind, their just reward being inducted. And they were central to what turned out to be my career just because if the game was on TV when I was a little kid, I was watching. And Jim and Tony were a big, big part of those early Twins teams that helped, generate or start my love for baseball in general and the Twins specifically.
I grew up in part in Pennsylvania and Maryland. I moved around a lot. And my first love was the Orioles teams, Brooks Robinson, Earl Weaver, Jim Palmer, that group. And it was really cool for me to meet Jeff Idelson when he was running the Hall of Fame and have him tell me the two nicest Hall of Famers he ever encountered were Brooks Robinson and Harmon Killebrew.
Well, Harmon was such a dear man. And I got to know Brooks a little bit because when I started, he was still broadcasting games. And I would throw Al Kaline in there as well. Guys who not just are among the nicest people I've met in baseball, just the nicest people I've ever met. So kind. You know, you've been around professional athletes, at least as much as I have in different sports, and very often they take on an air of elitism or something like that, that they're better than the average person like you and me. And when you meet people who have succeeded athletically at the very highest level, and yet they're just down to earth people, somehow that validates, I think, you know, our opinions of who we hold in esteem, maybe as sports heroes.
Dick, you calling me an average person, that's the nicest thing anybody said to me in a long time. I appreciate it. I'm going to get, Brianne can make sure we record that. I need to put that on my resume.
Well, I threw myself in there too. So, yeah.
Well, you're above average. We all know you're above average. You're just being humble. I wanted to talk about the fact that it's very obvious how much you love your job. And, you know, listen, I think most of us in this industry, most of us in this realm, we are fortunate to not be doing something more mundane. And most of us recognize that. But you really do come to the ballpark acting like you love the game, you love your job. Do you ever have to pretend, or is it always just natural?
No, I genuinely am enthused at the very highest level every time I walk into a ballpark. It'll be ratcheted up, I suppose, a couple levels later today when I walk into Dodger Stadium, just because of the history there and so many games that I saw on television as a kid from Dodger Stadium. So, yeah, it's not fake. You know, I mean, this is a job, and we all wish or strive to have a job that helps keep us young, if you will, and interested. And this job does it for me. You know, every time I see Jim Cott, I think about, you know, me as a 7-year-old kid watching him pitch on TV, Tony Oliva, the same thing. And so it's an evergreen passion, because every time I show up at the ballpark, I know I'm going to see something I've never seen before. And how many jobs allow the employees to feel that way?
Running joke among sports columnists across the country or friends of mine, especially when our industry hit a downturn and suddenly lifelong jobs suddenly were not necessarily guaranteed anymore. And we all joke with each other. It's like, boy, you know, probably time to get out of the business. If only we could do something else. But we can't. We're just writers, you know? Yeah. For you, if the unimaginable had happened and you hadn't gotten to do this dream job, what the heck do you think you'd be doing right now?
Boy, I don't know. It's a real good question. Thankfully, I haven't had to think about it much. I was forced to think about it, you know, when the threat of contraction was out there after the 2001 season. And I had a family to support. I had a mortgage. I had a lot of things, financial obligations, and I had no idea if the team had been contracted, whether I could hook up with another team, whether I could do something else. I found out very quickly, having sent out resumes, that talking for a living to that point in my life doesn't really qualify you for much of anything else professionally. So I have no idea what I would be doing if I weren't doing this. And I know it sounds corny, and I know it just sounds sophomoric, but I honestly believe, Jim, I was meant to do what I do for this team. And it's a wonderful feeling, and it has helped me over the years maintain my interest and my enthusiasm for what I do.
You're in Los Angeles right now. I imagine, at least at this moment, you're very much in favor of interleague play because you get to go to Dodger Stadium tonight. We're talking here on Tuesday early afternoon. Dick, of course, is in Los Angeles with the team. Do you have any favorite thoughts, memories, anecdotes about Vin Scully?
Well, I met the man once. There was when we first came out here for interleague play in 2005, and we had set up, because the Twins were honoring the 40th anniversary of the 65 World Series team that lost to the Dodgers. Vin was part of the national TV broadcast team along with the Twins representative, Ray Scott. And so they had this pregame interview set up, and it was just, of course, you know, 4 or 5 minutes. But then I spent another, half hour just talking alone with him, and then would have brief conversations with him. What I remember about that night was by the time, Vin did his game, I did mine from adjoining booths, next to each other. And so by the time we got back to the hotel here in Los Angeles, the Dodger Network had just started the replay of their broadcast that night. And I thought, well, now this will be great because I'll be able to listen to Vin do the game I had just done. And it was the most humbling thing I think I've ever walked in, because everything, and we had talked, Vin and I had talked about how at that time the Twins had 16 Australians in the organization. You remember those days when
Grant Balfour
scout or do anything in the Dominican, but they went to Australia and got a whole bunch of players for some reason. But it just sounded so much more interesting hearing that fact in his voice. And then one other quick note, we had had, we would run into one another in the hallway or whatever, say hi. And of course, all those guys, Vin, Ernie Harwell, Chuck Thompson, Jack Buck, they all remembered your name having just met you once. And it's a talent I wish I had, and I don't, and I regret that. But as we came out of the press box on Sunday after the series finale, I rode down the elevator with Vin, and he said, "Hi, Dick. Safe travels, whatever." And then he said, "Do you know what I've got in my hand?" And he had a bat in his hand, and he said, "I've got a Juan Castro autographed bat." And he said it with the enthusiasm you'd expect from a 7-year-old boy, not a 77-year-old man. Juan Castro started his career, playing career with the Dodgers, and then he finished it, or was toward the end of his career in 2005 with the Twins. And here was this man so proud of the fact that Juan Castro had autographed a bat for him. All the while, I'm thinking, this guy's probably got a Jackie Robinson signed bat, in his, office someplace. And I just thought, well, now there's an example of how toward the end of his career, he still had an intense passion for the game and even some of the more nondescript players who played the game. And I thought, well, now that's what everyone should strive for in their job, to have that level of enthusiasm and excitement so late in your career.
I don't know if this is the right time for me to tell this anecdote, but I'm going to do it anyway. And a friend of mine, Mark Wicker, longtime Los Angeles area columnist, he's standing up by the booth talking to Vin. They were pretty, they were pretty tight. They were just having a conversation. I won't use the man's name since Vin isn't around anymore, but I've been standing there talking to Mark, and a very famous national news media celebrity who lived in Los Angeles came up and just started just gushing all over Vin, because that's the way celebrities treated Vin, like he was a much bigger celebrity than they were. That's the way it works in LA. And the guy comes over and just kind of gushes all over Vin and gives him advice and tells him 18 things he didn't need to know, and then bustles off. Vin turns to Mark and says, and I can't do Vin Scully's voice, but the cadence. Vin turns to Mark and says, "What an asshole." I think Vin got a little worn down by the celebrities always trying to treat him like he was his best friend. That was a horrible, horrible Vin Scully story for me to tell, but I had to tell it. Let's transition. Last time you and I talked on this podcast, which is years ago, probably the beginning of the pandemic, you had just released your book, Game Used. Now that it's been out for a while, what has the reception been like, and what's been the most rewarding aspect of having written it?
Well, we weren't able to do book signings or anything like that, of course, because of the pandemic. We did get one in Fort Myers before spring training was aborted that year. I don't know, people bring copies of the book to the ballpark and have me sign the book. And I guess that part of it still impresses me, I guess, that it means something to them to have me sign the book, which I guess by extension suggests that maybe they enjoyed the book. People have expressed that. I still some days wake up or the thought is, I can't believe I actually wrote a book. But I'm glad I did. I think it it became much more of a personal memoir than I thought it would be when I started. I don't know how you guys do it. I think I've told you this privately. The writing of a book, the production of a book, for the first time really brought me face to face with the fact that you can change what you originally expressed. You know, I'm in live television. If I say something tonight that I wish I hadn't said, at least it's over and done with, unless it's bad enough to get on YouTube or, you know, retweeted someplace. But you guys who write for a living, it was an agonizing process, because I would go through stories and paragraphs and sentences and rewrite them and rewrite them and rewrite them. And it's got to be a very punishing way to make a living with the written word rather than the spoken word. At least when we make mistakes or say something on the air, it's out there and it's over and done with, and we talk about something else. We don't have the chance to go back and erase the tape and do it over again.
Yeah, after I get done writing, I relax by punching myself in the face. The crazy thing about writing is you could change every single word you chose to something else. Not necessarily advisable, but every word is a choice, and it can drive you absolutely bonkers. And that's why when I do podcasts, it's actually a relief for me to do podcasts, because I can just stumble around. I'm not comparing what I do to you, what you do. You're talking to a huge audience and people are hanging on every word, but I like this format because I can just, you know, I can talk, maybe someday I'll be as good at this as you are at your job. Dick, give us a final thought on anything you like before we let you go today. Once again, thank you for joining us. Thanks to our producer, Brianne Burnett. Thank you all for listening to TalkNorth.com. We got a million shows these days. Go to the website, find what you like. So, Dick, send us off with whatever thought you like.
Well, I think this is an exciting Twins team this year. It's been kind of disappointing, frankly, the last couple months. They've just kind of been bobbing around the 500 mark over the last couple of months. I do think this team is capable of playing its best baseball yet in the final weeks and months of the season. A tough assignment out here in Los Angeles. But this Twins team, they knew what their weakness was. The front office addressed it. And we'll hopefully be in for an interesting postseason if the Twins can get there, because I like how they put it together.
Yeah, I agree. This is a really interesting team, and I really like what Falvey and Rocco are doing. Hey, Dick, as always, thank you for the time. I appreciate it. Great to catch up with you, and I'll see you at the ballpark soon.
All right, Jim. Thanks.